I think that it's really important for everybody listening to know that, one, Catherine is wearing matching pink headphones and a pink Snuggie. I am wearing Catherine's rainbow bandana on my head and a girl that I met at Pride, her rainbow bow tie around my neck. And Robin is wearing the best elephant tank top I have ever seen in my goddamn life.
And it's very slutty.
It's super slutty.
In a great way, as all slutty things are.
It's 95% slutty.
5% elephant.
5% elephant.
Everyone, I'm Maddie, the anxious humanoid-like person.
I'm Catherine.
I'm Robin, the hungover boyo of the lake, and you're listening to Grow Up, a Saturday morning podcast for perfect millennials.
Oh, God!
Where we... What?
That word is so triggering to me right now.
Perfect is?
After watching the show last night?
Yeah, it was pretty fucked up, right?
Saturday morning podcast for perfect millennials, where we revisit media from our childhoods and deconstruct them from an adult perspective.
Tweet the name of your favorite television show, movie, book, or video game to @GrowThePodUp with a brief explanation of the themes that you remember being meaningful so that we can add it to our list.
We won't do it if it's a video game. You can also send us a voice message with your suggestions and your reasoning behind those suggestions to growthepodup@gmail.com. As long as your message is around 1 minute long, please feel free to share a personal story, a fond memory, or a funny little anecdote. And with your permission, we'll share your voice message on the air.
This week on Grow Up, we're delving into Courage the Cowardly Dog. So, let's just get right into it. First things first, why did we choose Courage the Cowardly Dog?
I don't know.
This was a viewer suggestion. We got a recording suggesting that we do Courage the Cowardly Dog from somebody named Richard. Thank you, Richard. He remembered it being really creepy and really meaningful. What did you guys think? Do you think it was creepy and meaningful?
I mean, yeah, that's a pretty good analysis. Quite creepy.
Hella
and
creepy.
It had a lot of metaphor and, you know, I think it could work as an analogy for a lot of things that are happening right now.
Oh, hell yeah.
Return the slab.
Yes, return the slab.
So what were our first impressions? What are the big things that stuck out to us?
I kind of watched each different episode differently. Mm-hmm. Which is to say I had a different sort of thing that I was focusing on in each episode.
Here's where I am. This show made me go into a hole of articles about nihilism and existentialism and absurdism and perfectionism. And that's where I am today. Not happy.
That's fair.
I personally, I have to advocate for nihilism.
Yes,
chance like that.
I love nihilism. This show is very nihilistic. And very absurdist and, like, philosophically absurdist, not just, like... So absurdism is the belief that human beings exist in a purposeless, chaotic universe, which is just absolutely the premise of this show. Where it goes a step beyond, you know, there's no meaning. It's also so fucking bonkers all the time. Yeah. And, like, this show is so just needlessly chaotic all the time. I wouldn't say needlessly, but just, like, from the point of coward... Or courage.
Yeah.
It's like, why is this all happening all the time?
I mean, literally anything could happen at literally any moment.
Yeah. And there's also a conspiracy theory that these aren't actually monsters. It's just what this dog interprets them as, which gives me some peace.
That's an interesting analysis. I really do like it, though. For this particular show, I really took everything at face value.
I mean, I think that's, like, the way that we're meant to interpret it, especially on the first pass. But watching it through on the second pass, I think that I kind of picked up on some of those things that could have been, you know, the perfect woman being, like, a dog trainer or you know, something not actually quite as
as
scary,
absurd
as fucking Courage thought it was. But, you know, no, I think it's important to dissect it from a perspective of this is all real.
I like that intellectually of like, this is real. I am at a place in my life this month that I need it not to be real. The things
that
are happening.
No, that's absolutely fine. We can
talk
about both, but on our first pass of talking through it, I think we should assume it's real and then talk about what it's, or even like side by side.
Well, I just want to hear what can you explain what you mean by that?
Me? Yeah, I wasn't trying to argue saying we should do it this way. I'm just like, I just, my life feels chaotic and out of control and makes me very upset constantly. And I just can't fathom that these things are happening to this poor, innocent dog. It must be something normal.
It has to be.
Or I can't deal with it. This fucked me up so much.
Oh,
so it's,
I'm sorry that this happened to coincide with a chaotic week.
It's not a chaotic week. It's a chaotic month. It's not a week.
It's a chaotic job.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's to explain to those listening, I just worked the most difficult job of my life. By far the most difficult job of my life, in which I have no control over anything. So this perfect episode really fucked with me, because it's no matter what I was talking about with one of my coworkers, it's like no matter how pumped I come into work saying like, I don't care what happened yesterday, I'm gonna get everything right today, I'm gonna be great, I'm gonna be perfect, something out of my control goes wrong in a huge way every day. It's not like little things. So that's like where I am watching this TV show, which was very much in line with the perfect episode.
Oh, yeah.
Now I'm going to sit back and let you guys talk about nice things. I just looked at myself. I had Google Hangouts, like, closed, and I just realized I went on that, like, angry rant wearing a pink snuggie.
And matching pink
headphones.
Yeah,
I just, like, went, and I'm like, I look very cute.
You just ranted about this job.
I was like so angry about my life, and like I look very cute.
The very opening image of the first episode that we watched, which is the Curse of
Ramses,
starts on a long open road, which is kind of a trope that's sort of meant to depict a journey, and it's kind of meant to depict, you know, the freedom, the openness of the road.
I think it's really interesting that you said it, you know, like it's freedom, like this open road. I also got, it's just like, it's isolating, such desolation. You know, it didn't strike me as like freedom, but I think it's really interesting that you saw it that way and I saw it as.
No, I do agree with you, actually, because I used the word freedom in this one particular instance, but throughout my notes and as I was watching it and as I was thinking about it, freedom was not the only idea that came up, but also the idea of loneliness, aloneness, isolation. I mean, they're out in a desert, right? This car is, it's out in a desert. There's no one nearby.
Mm-hmm.
It is very much isolated. And I use freedom because that's one of the words that is associated with, you know, the idea of the open road for me. But in this particular context, it takes on, as with everything in the show, it takes on a more negative context. Just atmospherically, it seems more negative, more alone, more isolationist than if it were an open road in any other context.
Especially because the people riding down this open road are grave robbers.
Yeah.
And an open road to someone like a dog. It's not like they can leave on that road.
It's not like they have any context for what that road means,
it's
either.
It's just the thing that brings the evil things
every
day.
Yeah, it's just the path that brings evil to his home. I actually really like that in the beginning of every show, like the intro to every show, they explain the content. They give you given circumstances for what this show is. They explain to you that we have a dog and who was abandoned as a puppy, who was found by these people who live in the middle of nowhere.
He was found by Muriel, which I think is an important distinction.
Yes, he was found by Muriel, who is his person. Like, every dog has its person, I suppose. Like,
my mom.
Your mom is most dog's person. I am clearly my dog's person, but especially rescues. And this is what Courage is. He's a rescue dog who was found by a woman and taken home with her. In the first half of that episode with Perfect, I don't know if you watched it, Catherine, but I made Robin watch it before we even started the Courage, the Cowardly Dog Week. And we get Courage's origin story. We meet his parents, who were shipped off to the moon by a veterinarian. I mean, this was a show that I was really afraid to watch when I was little. Like, I liked this show. I was allowed to watch it, but I was one of those kids who really liked to watch things that made me afraid. So I really enjoyed Jurassic Park, even though I was fucking terrified of the dinosaurs, which is why my mom thought it would be a fine idea to let her younger son watch Jurassic Park when he was a baby, and he screamed for like hours. And she was like, I don't understand. My daughter liked it, but I just liked to be afraid. So, but I could not watch Courage the Cowardly Dog without the lights on, because this was, for my little tiny brain, way too chaotic for me. Especially because, like, I don't know what it was, but the shift in art forms really scared me.
I thought that was so cool.
They change. I think it's brilliant as an adult, but when I was a kid, like, for some reason, that shift was so abrupt and so outside of my realm of outside my capacity of thinking that it was scary.
Just, I guess, another symbol that was pretty obvious, pretty straightforward, but that I enjoyed. There's the bad guys in the night. So that first episode of Ramses, we have bad guys who've just stolen a slab of like ancient Egyptian tomb.
Yeah.
Stuff. And bad guy, they're in the night. They bury it. Immediately it turns to day. It's a really, you know, like night turns to day transition, and then Courage comes along. So it's the bad guys in the night, but Courage is in the day. It's sort of your standard good versus evil stuff, but I thought it was worth, you know, mentioning. One of the things for me that this is like a running theme throughout a lot of the episodes, and so I wanted to sort of bring that up, is the idea of Courage being mistreated and vilified by his human owners.
Mm-hmm.
More specifically by Eustace.
By Muriel's like lack of...
Yeah. And those were two things that I wanted to talk about. But like how Eustace is actively mistreating...
Yes.
And blaming the dog. Like, in Ramses, one of the first actions that we see in terms of the relation between the dog and the... Courage brings in this slab. Eustace
so Courage
immediately...
is the rightful finder. Let's keep that pinned. Eustace immediately takes ownership of the thing that was found.
And yell... No, he doesn't take ownership. For the first thing he does is he yells at the dog. He says, you're so stupid. This is terrible. You suck at everything. You can't
you
do blah, blah, blah.
You brought trash into my home.
And throws it out the window. Once the slab is had and the ancient pharaoh comes along and says, return the slab. And then says the thing about the three curses, and one of the curses disappears off the back of the slab. Courage is the only person, or the only character, who notices that supernatural thing going on.
Mm, yeah.
And I wanted to sort of ask, you know, some questions with regards to that, because first of all, that's a kind of a common theme across a lot of kids' media, is that a specific character, usually the kid, or in this case it is the dog, but basically the non-adult character is the one that has the perspective and insight that the adults tend not to have. And I thought it was interesting sort of layer of abstraction that in this instance, it's not a young kid, but rather it is an animal. And I wondered what your guys' thoughts on the difference between that is, or your thoughts on
I don't think it's a difference. Because the creator of the show likes to create this triangle, apparently, of he likes a well-meaning but kind of ignorant woman, a horrible man, and an innocent. So in that way, I think coward or courage, God fuck
that. That's like the second time you've done that.
Yeah. Courage fulfills that same role as a child.
Yeah.
He does.
That he's innocent.
It doesn't matter that he's a different species. It's the fact that he's the innocent. Yeah.
Yeah. But it also, because he's a dog, it adds another layer there. It is coming through nature's lens, kind of. It's you're seeing it through a more animalistic point of view. And that's, I think, what allows the show to get so crazy. I can't imagine the Rugrats doing the same thing. I can't imagine the Rugrats being so intense, you know? And I think part of the thing that lets that happen is the fact that this is from a dog's perspective as opposed to a kid's perspective.
Which I think really just lends more validity to the theory that what Courage is seeing is just a blown-up version of reality.
Yeah.
I think that's a brilliant theory, and like I would love to watch the show with that in mind and try to figure out if I could assess and figure out what those things actually are.
There is another theory that they are just in purgatory.
Well,
so everything's real.
You know, there's also a theory that the Rugrats are all dead and ghost
babies.
Okay,
but here's what's different. That theory is stupid.
Correct.
And these theories are interesting. And the creator of this show, Dilworth, has a Dill in it, is a cool guy. And when asked about theories, he goes, yes, they're all true.
Oh, I love that. Because
he believes things the way I believe things, that art does not belong to one person. It is all open for interpretation, and it is to be made, you know, for yourself, and you decide what's
true.
Yeah.
Which I love. So you could, any, they're all true. All of these theories are true, depending which ones you think are true.
And I mean, artistically, this show is much more creative than, you know, something like the Rugrats. It's kind of preaching to a little kid choir, but it's like, this is what's good. You should explore. This is like, no, I'm going to tell you that you need to be brave by showing you a dog that's terrified and still trying to protect his owners. This is teaching you lessons in a much more subconscious and artful way.
Yeah.
Because speaking of those lessons and nuance, that I wanted to go back to what we were saying about like how Courage serves as the kid analog and gives us this perspective. And then what you were saying, Madison, about how what he's seeing is so much larger, is exaggerated. But I wanted to ask what you guys thought about what that says about this show's perspective on humans.
Yeah, I thought a lot about how much we suck when I was watching this.
Yeah, especially because we're watching this from the perspective of a dog that can't actually communicate via words to the humans in the show. He can communicate through apparently transmorphing his body into scary shapes.
Titanic.
But he can only speak to us, which is interesting. He can convey meaning to us. But
I thought that was really cool.
And to the villains, actually. If you notice, like, he can talk to the villains. The two people he cannot communicate with effectively are Eustace and Muriel, who he lives with, who he loves, who he protects.
Isn't that a conversation there? That the people you can't communicate with are your parents.
That's actually, whew, that feeds right into that, you know, that kid perspective of my parents don't understand.
No need to worry. Parents just don't understand.
And I mean, it's a meaningful triangle to make, parents to children, but it's, I don't know, is it the healthiest message to send?
Yeah, your parents are evil.
I don't know.
Today, on that note, today I'm going to go drink with my parents because they're in town.
Hooray!
It's going to be fun.
No, I love Catherine's parents.
But they're evil.
Yes, of course they're evil. No.
Okay, but what about the fact that they aren't... I mean, okay, because we're talking about them as parents, but these two people who are his parents are elderly.
That's true.
And I was wondering what you guys thought, not just what it says about humans, but what it says about these characters, that they are old. Why is that the choice? Why is that so important for this show?
Because there's something so foreign about the lives of the elderly, I think.
Especially two young people.
It's so alien because we don't see that represented in media. That's why the Golden Girls was like revolutionary. It was like old people have lives. I was thinking about that a lot when I was watching it, that it's like, even if their lives are weird and they live in the middle of nowhere, we're still seeing the continued lives of an elderly couple.
Of like the forgotten people too. They're elderly, they're alone, they're without children, and they're just in the middle of nowhere.
And which is just as alien, I feel like, as King Ramses, like, has just as much media representation.
The alien baby?
The little fetus?
Yeah, the creepy little thing in his dreams in Perfect. If I weren't so fascinated by it, that would give me nightmares. It was a weirdie.
I mean, it reminded me of, like, Eraserhead, but it wasn't as freaky as Eraserhead, so...
Right.
So it didn't freak me out.
This show scared me in a very different way from the way it scared me as a kid. Like, it was more of an existential terror. Especially in the episode Perfect. Like, that was a perfect... Like, Robin and I were, when we watched it the first time, we were chatting about how perfect the... Ironically perfect. Metaphor for anxiety was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how this woman really just symbolizes that voice in the back of your head that's like, you're not perfect, you're not good enough, always just harping on you and never giving you a moment's rest and always expecting the most, but when you don't reach that impossible expectation, then shaming you for it. It fucked me up in a very different way.
But there were so many small things that Courage the Cowardly Dog did or that happened in his life that were really exemplary of different circumstances in which a person with depression or anxiety often finds themselves. Like comparing yourself to others, if we're to take the symbol of you know, the matron with her stiff gray dress as, you know, a anthropomorphization of anxiety or depression, everything that happens underneath that umbrella obviously is going to be reflective of it. But for instance, there was a scene where she said, look, there's my, this is another one of my students, a perfect student, and he actually made a life-size replica of the Eiffel Tower. And the entire purpose of that was for Courage to have to compare himself to someone else. And that's, you know, just one example of the ways that we harm ourselves, you know, I say quotation mark, harm ourselves mentally speaking, is, you know, by comparing ourselves to the way that others do things instead of accepting ourselves for the way that we are and the things that we can do. There are other examples, but just like overall, as I had the idea in mind that this woman, this perfect woman, was the exemplar of anxiety and depression, the things that she did had such a strong correlation to the things that we do as human beings to make ourselves feel bad about ourselves that it really is hard to see it any other way. I mean, it's a pretty straightforward symbol.
Yeah, and I'm having a hard time remembering who it was, but it had to be an outside source to tell Courage that, no, you're perfect in all of your imperfections.
I did not have a hard time remembering that, because I have a very long note about this. And in fact, I actually had a discussion about it with people last night.
Really?
It is the fish that...
Oh, that's right!
Yeah, it's and the fish.
I'm not to just like monopolize the conversation
but no, please do.
The thing about this fish that and you guys, you two specifically know that I'm writing a short story that involves a magic fish. So you're already aware of that. But because that's on my mind as I've been thinking about it, and it came up in this show. But there is another trope, this trope of the magic fish that appears. Anytime a fish appears in literature or films, a large number of the time, you're going to find that the fish is going to have some sort of supernatural ability, which I think is fascinating, because fish is, fish are such funny creatures.
Yeah.
Fish is a funny word. They're not something that we tend to think of as, like, powerful or magical. But so often in literature that when they show up, they have a supernatural ability of some sort. Like, you think about the fairy tale about the fish that gets caught and that says, if you release me, I'll grant you your wish. In this particular instance, it is a fish that, first of all, we've seen it come back to life.
After being, like, prepared to being cooked. It's the same fish that Muriel was trying to cook for dinner.
Right. It comes back to life. It performs a role. In this instance, the role that it performs is a healing role. It's a healing fish. Basically, it talks to Courage and it gives him sort of the ex machina.
Yeah.
It's kind of an ex machina ending, but it gives him that self-esteem / confidence, to combat the depression and anxiety. Kind of just comes out of nowhere, but it heals him. The way that I have it in my notes here is that in Courage's case, the supernatural ability manifests as the power of healing. It is alive again, parenthesis magic, talking, parenthesis magic, knows what's happening in Courage's mind, parenthesis magic, and heals him with words of confidence, parenthesis magic, parenthesis ex machina, and parenthesis.
And that just points to, like, the chaos in the show is purposeful. It's purposeful chaos. It's there for a reason, and this particular reason is a deus ex machina fish talk, I guess.
Right now I'm obsessed with finding something on the internet about the symbolism of that deformed fetus, which I just realized is not a common trope. Wait.
What?
I think this is trying to say that the fetus is actually the bugle that Eustace had at the beginning.
What?
Let me look.
So, for anybody who hasn't immediately watched this episode like we did, but in the beginning of this episode, Eustace receives a bugle in the mail, but it's broken, and he insists that he can fix it, even though while it's broken, he uses it to terrify Courage, the cowardly dog.
Oh! I'm watching the clip right now, and it starts with Eustace holding the bugle, and then it goes to Courage, and he's sleeping.
Well, that really ties into the idea that Courage is conflating things as a scared dog.
Yeah, I totally think that's what it was. Okay, so that's
so funny.
Fetus is the bugle as a scary in utero.
Scary, noisy item, yeah.
I have to talk about this fetus.
Yes, please talk about this fetus.
Why a fetus?
Well, that's a very, very good question. What do you think?
A yearning to return to the safety of the womb. And then when he gets there, the bugle is there to remind him even then he wasn't perfect. There's no way to escape his imperfections. He can't even go back to the womb.
Yeah, he can't be safe even within the womb. That's really interesting to me.
Because this goes from being a deformed baby telling him he's not perfect to this wonderful, perfect bugle with a human face and beautiful voice. So, like, weirdly, absurdly, a creature that is perfect.
But is it perfect? Because yeah. The bugle came broken.
But now it's, like,
it's healed.
Now it's a human bugle. So it's a perfect item now. Okay, I'm done with the fetus. You can talk about other things.
Was that the moment when we were watching it, Robin, that you just screamed, "What the fuck?"
Yes.
I mean, it is initially quite disturbing not knowing what I was getting into with this show.
Yeah.
And then that being sort of the thing that you introduced.
You're welcome. Me to it with. Oh, you know what we never did say? Virgin alert for both of you. Virgins!
I resent that. We didn't get Cartoon Network. It was a different time. We didn't have Netflix and YouTube and Hulu. I could only watch what was on the cable. We didn't get Cartoon Network. You're not perfect.
But that's the point, is that we're not perfect, and that's okay.
Is it?
You're perfect in all of your imperfections. I actually directed a play one time where that was the meaning of, that was like the spine of the play.
But is it okay?
It is. Of course it is.
How?
Nobody's perfect. Prove it.
Because in the hole I got in last night, might not be okay.
Explain that.
So the philosophy of perfectionism is to try and obtain an attainable self that has not been actualized. And there's never, there's not an end to it. The whole point of it is living your life in a way, it's not like you're going to achieve it and you're going to be that thing. It's just perfectionists live their life to try and be their best self. I'm not saying I agree with this. I don't know what I think. The internet confused me last night. But there was this one philosopher that I forget the name, but he believed that, like, we just need to get down and be our true selves that are inside. And it's like, that's a falsity. There is no true self. There's just the, like, our idiosyncrasies and our tendencies. And we think of that as ourselves. And by not going after perfectionism, by just saying it's okay that I'm this, we could be dangerously just saying it's okay that I'm a fucking slob, or it's okay that I treat people this way. I'm just being my true self. And it's not necessarily a true self, it's just a habit.
I think I agree with that.
But I don't know, because I also want to just be like, the fish said I'm beautiful the way I am. But am I? Or am I a disgusting person who needs to fix my habits because they're bad?
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. I think as a Virgo and somebody who grew up as a perfectionist, I think that caused me a lot more anxiety and a lot more depression than it actually drove me to perfection.
Yeah, I don't think you can.
I'm clearly not perfect.
Because the thing is, like, I don't believe in that, like, attainable self. Like, I have tried so many times. I have this idea in my head of being this calmer person. I just realized I was saying that with that shrill voice, and it made me laugh. There is this calmer person that I want to be, that doesn't go out and get stupid drunk and make dumb decisions and eat muffins and sit around in my own filth and just do these crazy stupid things. I want to be serene, and I want to meditate and eat healthy and not yell, but I continue to be chaotic inside and outside and make like decadent decisions and stuff like that. And I've tried since I was like 18, 7 years, which for people who are older, like, that's nothing, but I've tried so hard to be that person and I've never got there. So I 100% don't believe that it's, like, possible to attain that. I think there are parts of it I can attain, but I don't think I'll be happy until I tell myself, like, you don't need to be that person.
Right. And I think by definition, perfection is unattainable. It's not real. There is no attainable perfection. That's not a real thing.
Yeah.
I was on a set recently, and the makeup artist was giving me sideburns.
Yeah, cute.
Oh.
You know, he was a very friendly guy. He was a very... And as he was doing this procedure, giving my sideburns, somebody behind us were having a conversation. And one of them said, brashly, boldly, "I'm a bit of a perfectionist." And the makeup artist turned around, and this is a guy who's like very successful in his field, like has done a lot of really good, like, you know, he'd been telling me his pedigree, his resume as he was doing this. It was impressive. So he is somebody who knows what he's doing, is successful at what he's doing, is happy what he's doing. So, immediately, as soon as somebody said, "I'm a bit of a perfectionist," he turned around and he said, "Don't be a perfectionist. Be an excellentist. Because perfection is unachievable, but excellence is within your grasp."
I really like
that. I like that a lot, too.
Yeah, it was...
I think that there's a big difference between... You know, you can... be excellent without reaching for this unattainable, impossible goal of perfection, because that's never going to happen. And that's okay. That's the point of what the fish was saying, is it's okay to never attain perfection. What you are is enough, but you're allowed to strive for better. You don't have to feel ashamed because of what you are and who you are. You can always be better. Everything you, especially because when you're striving for perfection, you tend to perform worse because you have all of this pressure on you. You are succumbing to the pressure of perfection and you're not performing at your best.
And like a huge problem with perfectionism, and I went for a fucking trip last night and I just have so much to say, but I realized we are so surrounded by beauty, mm-hmm. and a lot of times we don't see it, but last night I became hypersensitive to all the beautiful things around me, and I realized the danger in that, because you do look at the Eiffel Tower and you don't mm-hmm. see all the fucking work that went into that. We're just surrounded by masterful, beautiful things. And in like binge culture, where I'm somebody who works at like TV, and I watch like these fantastic TV shows with these great stories, like how would I even begin to write something, because my first draft is not going to be anywhere near that. But you don't see the years of work. We're just surrounded by beauty, and so then perfectionism becomes like, it just breaks you, because it's, don't see the work it takes to get to that. You just see the end product, and it's like, why can't I get to that?
That's like very much like social media as well. Right, in the sense that it may not necessarily be the work that goes into it, but you are seeing just like a version of beauty that is manufactured, that doesn't give you a full picture of the other lives that you'd be comparing yourself against.
That's true.
Life is so hard.
Life is really hard. And you know what? You don't deserve to have to bow under the weight of this perfectionism.
I would like to say
that's something that I have. Go ahead.
A jack of all trades is a master of none, but oftentimes better than a master of one.
Oh, hey.
Just wanted to say that.
In all of my biographies, well,
all the biographies written about yourself?
No, I mean like my bios for, you know, programs, because I work on the theater. Almost always I refer to myself as a Jill of all trades, because what I do in the theater is always different. And that's something that I'm really like actually kind of self-conscious about in a way. But I guess like by publicizing that fact that I'm often doing something different. So I'm bouncing around between stage managing and directing and acting and, you know, once in a while being an electrician, which I'm not qualified to get paid for, but do on a volunteer basis. By publicizing that, I guess I feel like I'm trying to show that I'm working on myself in a lot of different ways and not just one. And that because, like, perfection is unattainable in any of these things. but I'm going on a tangent. But I don't know. I think it's about working on yourself in a lot of different ways without putting the pressure on yourself to attain perfection. It's about what this makeup artist said. It's about becoming excellent.
I think perfectionism is evil. I think we all need to be optimistic nihilists.
I absolutely agree. Optimistic nihilism is probably the healthiest way to exist.
That's how I've been for a while.
I was just looking through all the quotes I took last night, which have like nothing to do with the show. But I found a video, because optimistic nihilism is not actually a real school of thought. It was mostly invented by this one YouTube channel, Kurzgesagt, something like that.
What?
If you type in optimistic nihilism, it's what comes up. They do a lot of existential dread animations. The animation's really amazing. But they did this video about optimistic nihilism, which I really needed last night, and there's a quote from it. And it was saying, "We are as much the universe as a neutron star or a black hole or a nebula. Even better, actually, we are its thinking and feeling part, the sensory organs of the universe." Which made me feel very good, because this show just made me so existential. I don't even know how I got to talking about this. Does this have anything to do with courage?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
It's just like this show made me question, like, what am I?
Yeah.
What is the best way to live my life? And I don't know why. It seemed very simple, but this show just made me question it all.
That's really interesting, because this show kind of presents, you know, this dog's name is Courage, but he's cowardly. And we kind of think of cowardice as something negative. But he is very courageous.
Absolutely.
He does go out of his way to protect his family in the face of things that he expects will kill him.
Yeah. It's the fear in this show is not of actual violence. It's of the opportunity of violence being enacted upon you. As opposed to things like Tom and Jerry, where it's like we're being bashed over the head. And it's all just courage imagining what's going to happen to himself, which is absolutely just anxiety.
Yeah.
I have a exact quote about what Kylie was talking about from tvtropes.com. It says, "If there's any message in this show, it's that courage isn't necessarily synonymous with fearlessness. Courage at least means being willing to challenge one's own fears instead of running away and doing the right thing no matter how difficult it may seem." This episode and every episode like it features the song Enthusiast by the band Tours.
To make a suggestion, tweet the name of your favorite television show, movie, book, or video game to @GrowThePotUp with a brief message about why it was meaningful to you.
You can also send us a voicemail with your suggestion to growthepodup@gmail.com. Share a personal story, a fond memory, or a funny little anecdote. Give it about a minute, and then with your permission, we'll share your message on the air.
You've been listening to Grow Up, a Saturday morning podcast with Kath Thorne and your side, Johnson.
Still me, Robin Coppin.
And Maddie Gray. If you really like us, please share our podcast with your friends, donate to our podcast, or follow us on your social media platform. We are @GrowThePodUp on literally everything, including Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, and Facebook.
Join us next time as we continue our Grogtober festivities with the renowned classic Halloween Town.